No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. And today I am here with Tiny Jag. How you doing?
What's going on, man? I'm doing good.
Doing good?
Hell yeah.
Your last day in California?
It's my last day in California. My last few hours, honestly. I'm out of here at like 11:30 tonight.
Is it sad?
Yes.
You love it out here?
I love it out here.
Really?
I do. I'm going to Chicago, though, for some lit stuff, too, so it's not too bad. But I, like, big love it out here.
Really? Yeah. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you guys came in smoking and a little bit of whiskey was being poured up.
Hello.
I got a lot of respect for that.
Thanks. Mm. Thank you. What makes you respect that?
A lot of people just go through their lives stiff as hell out here, and it just doesn't... Yikes. And as much as I'm a person who doesn't really like the daytime drinking thing, I can respect the energy that it brings to any given situation, you know?
I heard that. We don't do it every day, but right. We definitely have some days where it just makes sense as soon as the eyes open up.
Right. Every day could definitely be a problem. But I mean, you ever been to San Francisco?
No.
Okay. But there's a park. This is like a big grass hill. It's called Dolores Park. And when I first went there, it's just wall to wall people sitting in the grass, just drinking and smoking and just hanging out all day.
Holy shit.
And it just occurred to me, because at the time when I first saw that, I was living in New York, and that is so not the energy in New York. New York, you wake up and grind. It's so expensive.
Right.
And I mean, same shit with San Francisco. It's so expensive to live there that you just have to wake up and get on your fucking grind, because if you don't, you are going to die in the streets in the long term.
Yikes.
Anyway.
That's that New York energy.
So before we even get into anything that's been going on lately, tell me about where you're coming from.
Before that.
Yeah, just like where you grew up and everything about your
upbringing. All over the place, man. I am coming from some mixed up shit. It's lit.
Really?
It honestly is lit. So when I was born, I lived with my mom and my grandmother and my grandmother's husband, which is the only grandfather I've ever known. But we lived in Hamtramck, which is a town inside of Detroit. Like, it's wrapped completely around by Detroit. It's surrounded. Oh. So it is only about 2 miles wide. So it's very small, but it's a very interesting place. It's super melting pot. Like, there's some of everybody in there. But we lived there for a few years, and then I moved to the east side of Detroit. From there, maybe I was in private school, so that gave me a little bit of a mix up too. So from there, we couldn't afford private school anymore. So we moved to the suburbs to get suburb education, to get away from the local education in Detroit.
So when you moved to Detroit, was it like noticeably worse, lower?
Oh no, like no? With Hamtramck being right in the middle of it anyway, no, I mean, there was no
okay,
shock
so
or anything
similar
there.
Type of
oh yeah, there was more shock leaving Detroit going to the suburbs for sure.
Right,
there was more shock there, not quite as much as maybe anybody else, because I was always dancing in the suburbs. I was always in academy dance,
right?
So I was doing that in the suburbs while I was living on the block. So it was like, I was always had a little bit of exposure, but it was definitely a change as far as my residential area. Going to the suburbs was definitely like a different thing. Like, you don't hear the loud music, you don't hear the ambulance, you don't hear anything. You can't play your own damn loud music. You're getting the cops called on you for sitting in front of your own house type shit. So that was like, that was a culture shock for me.
Yeah, that's super interesting to me, because I feel like a huge percentage of people that I interview in terms of rappers and stuff who are doing well for themselves end up being people that are maybe like from the hood, but then for whatever reason ended up spending time in the suburbs or spending time in, you know, different countries or shit like that. And I think that the thing is that at some point, because to be a rapper is really to be like monetizing your upbringing and struggle and basically presenting it to a world that is fascinated by whatever that you've gone through that they haven't gone through.
Facts.
And I feel like a lot of people who have that sort of like early life experience of seeing how other people live and realizing what they find interesting about you sort of like lends itself to them then being able to like present their story in a better way that is appealing to people.
Hell yeah. And it gives you an opportunity to build relationships. It builds like a tolerance that you have for things that are different than yourself.
Right. Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of us that don't have that opportunity to experience a lot of different things, we get shut off to things that are different, and that sometimes it inhibits relationships that would have blossomed to even happen in the first place, that didn't just, you just cut your own foot off just because that tolerance you don't have, you weren't just exposed to it. Don't mean to, but it's just without that exposure, without being seasoned and having like experience with different cultures, it just is, it, that tolerance is just low.
Yeah. So were you always, you were talking about the dancing thing, but were you always super creative? Was your mind always sort of geared towards art and music and that kind of thing?
I would say so. I was only child too, so I was always into anything imaginative, anything where I could like take on something else maybe for a minute, or like whatever, really do whatever I wanted. Like, I was always into anything that let me do whatever I wanted, and my imagination was like the main place that could go down.
Yeah.
Anything that mimicked my imaginative ability I was into. So whimsical dancing, things like that, you know,
right.
kind of tapped into that type of vibe for me. So it made sense. I started to dislike it once it got so rigid, once it did get so...
The dancing thing?
Yeah,
where it becomes you have to be this, like, expert athlete and stuff?
Yeah, and it's like, your ass is too fat. You're this, you know, that type of situation. I'm like, kind of like my ass a little bit.
That kind of thing?
Yeah. Like, oh, and in my imagination, my ass was fat, so I didn't want to give that up.
Wow, that's cool. You listen to enough songs about fat asses that you just... Oh, man, I think about that sometimes when I see, like, an awkward, like, 12-year-old girl, and then I just think about what rap music is doing to her brain of, like, convincing her that her body and her what she looks like is not good enough.
That's a thing, but I think I just came from big stock. Mm. You know, my family, it's like
what they embedded that no, confidence
they got
in you?
They got the butts, so oh, I saw okay. myself with the butt.
I'm gonna be honest, I have no idea about your ass right now. I've not really
it's all right
witnessed anything like that.
It's all right.
Okay,
I get compliments, not a ton.
I'm so woke, I just stay eye level. I don't look down anyway. anyway, okay, so when did you, like, really fully decide that you wanted to be a rapper?
I keep saying 18 months. I think that's, like, relatively accurate, though. Like, maybe 18, maybe, a year and a half
18 months ago, holy shit. Okay.
Like, for real, for real. I did music, like, before I went away to school. So back in, like, maybe 2009, 2010, I did a little bit of music. But I was, like, being influenced a lot by my environment and not so much being myself at the time. So I ended up turning on it because it didn't feel right at the end of the day for the reason that I wasn't being true to myself.
You're a drill rapper or what?
No, I was super conscious rapper, actually.
Oh, okay, really?
Yeah, I was super, which is still true to myself as far as where my morals are, but not in my, like, self-expression and my outlet.
Uh-huh.
I was, like, limiting myself from actually expressing, so that lack of liberty turned me away from the music for a second.
Oh.
And then I realized it was, like, user error. And I was like, okay, I was just doing it wrong. I wasn't being me. And
what were your influences that even sort of ended you up in that, like, conscious rapper slot? Like, what were you listening to that was sort of the first thing you gravitated towards?
Low key, it wasn't even what I was listening to, because I used to listen to the craziest shit in, like, privacy. But it was more about the people I was around. They were, like, super hip hop rappers and, like, uh-huh. the people that introduced me to even having, like, to the legends that gave me the platform to even rap a couple times in the first fucking place. Those people were, I didn't want to bring what I had. I wouldn't bring that energy to them because I didn't know how they were going to feel about it type shit. So I just fit their lane so I could, you know, make sense with that. And just on a, like, an internal level, that just turned on me. That didn't work out.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So fast forward to what has been going on more recently. Like, where were you at with your career in terms of you, like, getting booked for this festival? And, like, what was your perspective on that going into it?
Very lax, only because it was introduced to me months before the actual bill was drawn up. And it was introduced to me kind of by, like, a friend that was just kind of like, you want to do a show with me and my friends in a few months? And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, sounds good. He had just done a show for me. So it was real lax. Like, I mean, I'm getting a buzz, like, in Detroit, you know what I'm saying? But at the time, I wasn't really buzzing much. I was buzzing in maybe Chicago. I had a few shows in Chicago, or I had a show, and one headlining show in Chicago, a few headlining shows in, like, Texas. But, I mean, the buzz was definitely growing, especially at that small-ass rate of, like, a year and eight 6 months.
Right.
But it definitely was not a, like, crazy buzz. I was respected. I was getting my respect. I was getting my respect on, at least in my area.
Like, when this thing started to pop off, I was like, oh yeah, I've heard of her. Like, I had definitely seen your name.
Shut
on
the fuck up.
No, I had seen your name on flyers and stuff like that. So I had already, like, had been a little bit familiar, but not, like, enough to have, like, necessarily got into the music, which I have now consumed at length.
Good to know.
Okay.
But, okay, I can drink to that.
Okay, so when did you realize that this festival that you were booked at had an interesting pricing structure?
Damn.
And, you're biracial?
Yes, I am okay, so listen, this is a small little piece too. So I've always considered myself biracial by the definitions that I've heard.
Uh-huh.
But I'm learning now that some people consider biracial only if one parent is white and one parent is not. So, or maybe just two different races at a 100% type thing. That's what's trying to be shoved down my throat now,
you're what, like 25% white?
My mother is black and white.
Right.
And then my father is black and Native American.
Oh, okay.
So I'm really, and then there's a lot of different things actually going on with my mom. So it's just like, honestly, I said mutt, and I threw biracial to try to clean it up.
Right, yeah, just simplify the idea.
You know, so I just said that, but it really, I said I was as off the rocker to say mutt. And that's really what I say, though. Like, I'm all jumbled up. And then that's just what I fucking know. Who knows what's in there that I don't know nothing about?
But did that, as a kid growing up, did you ever have any kind of, like, identity crisis in terms of, like, oh, well, I'm not, like, fully black and I'm not one of the white kids? And did you ever feel like you weren't, like, accepted by different groups? Or is this kind of, like, a new thing for your identity to be so in question?
It's so funny because a bigger thing for me growing up that I thought I was, like, getting the looks and stuff like that is I was heavy as shit.
Oh, okay.
So I thought I was getting all that only because I was heavy, because I grew up with a very fair-skinned mother, a white grandmother, and a white grandfather. So I wasn't really even paying attention. Everybody that was looking at me funny looked like the people I'm around, and I couldn't imagine me looking much different from them because the people in my house don't look at me like that. But the people in my house accept the fact that I'm chunky and that I like snacks. Okay. So it must be that you're judging me because I'm heavy.
But you had a growth spurt at some point?
I had a growth spurt at some point. I grew upwards, and I was still getting the looks, though.
Right.
And that's when I started to realize, like, okay, it was hindsight, really, that taught me more about where I probably could have an identity crisis if I was skinny and mixed.
Right. You have bigger things to deal with.
You know,
body image issues, like,
I
triumph
literally
over everything.
Had bigger things to deal with. So, yeah. So I was focused on that. Those were my insecurities were. So that is where my focus lied. And so I wasn't so much paying attention to the fact that some of those looks were because of, my racial, mix up. So, from there, though, once I started to realize, and I started getting higher education and things of that nature, and outside of private / predominantly white education, and doing a lot of self-educating and things like that, I had a few, some of my, like, African-American literature teachers were definitely very hands-on with me because they knew that I was thirsty for that stuff. So that kind of led me into the direction of wanting to know more about myself, my black self. And I actually dove into it to a fault where I ended up in the conscious community and didn't find, that wasn't my tribe either. Like, I dove into it head first on some, I need to know. Like,
you don't feel like you really fit in with the super woke crowd?
Oh, hell no. Cause I pulled up drinking Jack.
They're not into that though. I feel like everybody likes some alcohol, right? They're that stiff? Because I don't associate with these kind of people. They're too woke for me, I think.
I'm to the point where it's a little too woke for me, too. Like, I'm not good with these labels anymore. And, I mean, that sounds so cliche, but I'm starting to understand. I know why it's cliche now.
Yeah.
I thought everybody just said it. Like, I see why that's cliche. Like, that shit, you'll run into that shit looking for, like, your spirit animal. And it's like, you don't find it. And it's like devastation. And it's like, you don't need to run into shit looking for that
type
of thing.
But you went against the party line. Like, you came out and you dared to have a different opinion about how racial equity should be structured in our society, which, regardless of the legitimacy of your opinion, to a lot of people, that's going to be like, she turned on our cause, period.
Man, and I didn't even think about that when I made the decision. And I don't think that it would have been different only because it was so like, I can't. It was really just a, I can't. And the only reason that it was even a public thing was because the curators allowed me to publicly support it already without my knowledge of what was going on with the ticket structure. Had it been brought to my attention, like, this is what we plan on doing, it would have never even been public. And had I not got that exact backlash of hate after I apologized to my own fans for supporting it, we wouldn't be here.
Right.
So you're spot on. That's exactly why I'm sitting across from you, is because of how many people feel like that is what was going on, opposed to me just seeing a different and much bigger picture.
Right. See, okay, let's just get into this. Like, I see a lot of people coming with the reaction of sort of surface level reaction of like, this is fucked up. You can't charge different races different prices, which I do think is fair. But at the same time, it's like, I do relate to the problem that I feel like they were trying to write with this pricing structure.
Off
because,
top, yeah.
For instance, I was just in Chicago for that Lyrical Lemonade Festival, and the audience was definitely like 80% plus white. And that did occur to me. It's like, we're in Chicago, we're like downtown Chicago, there's mad hoods everywhere. I'm sure the racial breakdown surrounding this area is super mixed and very heavily people of color. But if you have a festival, and I don't know how much he was charging for tickets or anything, I'm assuming it was a little bit on the expensive side.
Right.
And it is kind of like, well, shit, that would have been really dope if they had been able to figure out a way that they could sell tickets for a cheap price to people that actually live in the zip codes surrounding that area, maybe before they necessarily. And also, there's the whole thing with like scalping tickets or whatever, where a lot of people are buying tickets regardless of if the price is cheap, and then they're just reselling it to whoever can afford it. So there is kind of an issue that I'm sure. Have you ever like noticed that being an issue in Detroit, or is this sort of like a new concern for you?
No, it's definitely an issue. And it's insulting to me that that was the first thing that was spewed out, is that I must not know, because I, like I told you, I was so knowing, I was in the damn conscious community on that shit. So, I mean, I have been in so many different circles and vocal and instrumental in these circles where I know some shit, and you are able to see that, and you ain't on that tip regularly. You didn't go to Lyrical Lemonade to figure out, to take a census, but your naked eye was able to see, damn, this would have been an opportunity.
Yeah.
It's not fucking hidden. Mm. It's clear. The issue is there. It's obvious. But how we go about it, we got to be tactful. You know what I'm saying? Like you even said, that you even gave a nice segue, even if there's some things we need to think about as far as executing it. Zip code, maybe, you know, that's an idea, you know, county, maybe, even type of thing, where those people have an opportunity before people that are not so relative.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it's got to make sense. You're talking Lyrical Lemonade. We're talking about the difference of 10 bucks. Like, it didn't make sense. It was more, to me, it was trying to make a statement more than it was actually trying to put equity in the black community.
Mm.
How are we going to put equity in the black community? Extra 10 bucks on a white head? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. We need to, like, that just, it's doing the same dehumanizing to me that was being done to us. You're just like, I'm not here with that.
Right. And I know nobody wants to like feel bad for the white kids that are pissed off that they have to pay an extra 10 bucks. But at the same time, I think that something that sometimes might get left out of these conversations is that, like, what is the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is for people of color to feel like they have the same opportunities and that there is more equity in the way our society is structured. It feels like in the long term, like the effect of charging two different prices based on race, it's like these entitled white kids are going to react to that at some point.
Period.
And are going, like, it's just not going to be good overall for race relations between people if you come up with structures like this that don't really seem logical to people,
right,
even if the intention is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something that, I mean, they've seen it for sure, the Afrofunk Festival, because, I mean, they were just attacked by a lot of pretty, like, unseemly people. I'm sure it was a lot of, like, alt-right people and stuff who were commenting on
their
shit.
Absolutely. They started to get, all of us started to get threats, all types of things going on, which is super unfortunate. I mean, it's definitely not because... It's only because of exactly what you just said. It was something that was done very radically that ended up coming off just negligent and not well thought out, only because the goal wasn't even tangible with the means. It's nowhere near. There's no way that we can bridge that equity gap with something like a festival where I'm one of the biggest names on it.
Mm.
At that, it's not gonna happen. Like, it could be the start of something, but in that case, then we need to act as if we need to humble ourselves and have things that happen that looks like this is the start of something and plant the proper seeds so that we can be impartial. A great friend of mine mentioned that equity has to be impartial. If you want to gain equity, you have to be impartial. You need everybody's money. You need everybody's cheese, especially if we're going to be focused on children, or especially if we're going to be focused on marginalized areas, especially if we're going to be focused on areas that are in need.
Mm.
So that having that impartial ability to just reach masses includes people that may have in ancestry done you wrong and that have all the money. So we're not here to piss nobody off if we're here to make money.
Yeah.
So just at a business level, if we can't understand nothing else as far as on our spirit or on any, as far as we view politics or principles, we can at least say this was a bad on business if we're trying to put money into the black community, if we're trying to put money into the hands of these children. That's just not how, that's why it wasn't for me.
When you decided that you were going to pull out of the festival, how did it become national news? Did you just tweet about it, or did somebody put out a press release? Or especially like when we had our initial conversation about it, I was like, I just want you to be mindful of the fact that all of these right-wing people are going to be trying to weaponize you having done this.
Right. And I thank you for that too.
It's a tricky place for you to be in, because
you
are kind of becoming, like, whenever there's any kind of infighting between like activists or people on the progressive side, people on the left, that is inevitably always weaponized by people on the other side.
Right. Which we could see coming, which you could definitely see coming. That is honestly one thing that I did think about once I started to get the backlash, not only because how the narrative could be modified to fit a nasty agenda, but just because on some blackies are fighting type right. shit. You know what I'm saying?
Look at the crazy left. Yeah. They hate each other. Look They're eating the each other alive.
Exactly.
It's all, it's such cliches, you know?
I hated all that shit, but I definitely saw it coming. But it's like a necessary evil just because we got put there. It was the reality of it. I mean, I couldn't stand behind it. That is what it is. But as far as the national coverage, that was like happenstance. Like, it was literally, like I said, I was publicly supporting it without knowing, so I had to publicly apologize. I apologized to my fans just in case they were triggered, because I was triggered by the shit. Like, mm-hmm. I was told by a homegirl of mine, a white homegirl of mine that's been a friend since I was a child, who had just gotten herself together enough, like, she fights anxiety, so she had just gotten herself together enough to come support me at a show, just because she's not used to being around a lot of people, shit like that. So she just gotten herself together enough to, she was like, I'm coming, period. She went to go buy a ticket, and that's the first thing she sees. She sends it to me like, I know you didn't know about this. So I'm like, holy shit.
It's like so strange to imagine like scrolling down to buy a ticket and it's just like, what race are you? It's just like, really?
Okay.
And it how matters. Am I gonna how are you gonna prove this? Like, if I write that I'm black, are y'all gonna be like checking my skin tone when I show up at the venue to go in? Like that just stood out to me as like it might be easy to take advantage of. I wouldn't do that for the
I'm
record.
I don't feel like that needs comment. I feel like that right there, I mean, that's clear as day. But yeah, so that happened. I got that. So I was triggered, and I wanted to reach out to possibly anybody that had supported me, especially because I do have a great amount of white fans, like, and they go fucking hard as fuck, and family, and whatever else. So yeah, I was emotionally triggered first and foremost, and I'm not even going to lie. That's why in the beginning, those outlets that I did speak to, it is emotionally charged about my family. Mm. But immediately it rushed me that it wouldn't matter what I had going on. You know what I'm saying? Those just aren't my beliefs. And not only just my beliefs as mankind, but my beliefs as a black woman. I don't see that getting us where we're trying to go anyway. Mm. So it was principally against what I had going on, and also emotionally what I had against what I had. So I apologize to my fans in case they felt those ways that I had just felt.
Do you think that the people that are kind of on the other side of this, the organizers of the festival and stuff, do you think that you might be kind of different from them in that you do have close relationships with a lot of white people?
Absolutely.
And I think that that's kind of like the thing, is that a lot of white people just straight up don't know what it's like to have a strong connection with black people. I see people tweet about that all the time. Like, if you really want to get to know what white people are like, date one of them. And then you get to meet their family, like black people saying this. And that's like always kind of stood out to me as like, oh shit, like a lot of people just straight up, like I've always taken it for granted that I just knew a shitload of black people and had normal ass friendships with them.
Right.
A lot of people don't really have a lot of friends who are white or vice versa. And that kind of puts you in like a different position in terms of how you viewed all this going down.
And then even, it absolutely did. But even that idea is worrisome, you know, because even then it's like on some, date a black person or date a white person on some like spectator shit, you know, it's still, which is still the issue that Afrofuture is taking with this phenomenon. And I get that. I support that. I support the fact that we should be able to celebrate ourselves without feeling like we're being spectated. Mm. And I feel like that's absolutely fair. I just feel like we can get there without doing stuff like this. And in fact, this could possibly be a setback in trying to get there, because it's still just, it's loud is the word that I keep using. It's loud. And I understand that we get to our wit's end. I understand that we're frustrated with hearing the history over and over again and trying to be change. And I get that. And that's the same empathy that I want to give the brand, you know, for just trying to make some shit shake. And I get that. But as like, to auntie them, it's like, no, this ain't it. Like, this isn't how we do it, which was really my only point from the beginning, was this isn't how we do it. It only became something else because what I thought were my own people decided to turn on me, and that is when it became something different. So, but my big message is this just ain't it. That the goal is gold. The intent, as far as I know, I don't know them personally, but the intent, as far as it's being presented, gold. But the means in which to get there, tainted,
right.
You know, emotional, not business oriented, not success focused, not any of those things. There's not even a measurable there's not anything measurable going on. How are we going to even measure if we won, if we're winning, if we're going in the right direction?
Right. And I think the most important thing is that you should feel 100% open and like your voice is being heard if you're willing to have a dissonant opinion on a topic like this. And that for anybody who's looking at you like you're some kind of traitor because you went against like one of the tenets of whatever their fucking ideology is, that's crazy. It's like these conversations need to be engaged. And that's the kind of thing that if this conversation were to have taken place, and it looked like it was an actual like holistic healing environment where this was a conversation that was being embraced by the community, then like the outsider perspective on it would ideally be more that like, oh, look at this interesting, important conversation that is happening. But instead it just, I don't know that it has, but it seems like it's been painted as if you're kind of the villain. But then also it's like, you're clearly like a hero to a lot of people who think that you really just like stood up for the right thing.
Right. And it's crazy because they're both of them are definitely there. The only reason that one feels more, it affects me more is because there's so many people that loved me in this group. Mm. These people, they're just now meeting as this heroine.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? These people loved me before I was a heroine and now hate me afterwards.
You think
and
that's largely the opinion though, is that there's a lot of people who are really
largely.
Yeah, it's gotta be a fringe.
I don't think it's
right?
largely. That's specifically why I said that. I think it's only large to me because some of these people have my phone numbers. Some of these people, their last message to me is what time does the show start? That is why it's affecting me, because it's like, damn, it's like that. I had no idea. And then it also affects me because I didn't know this is where at least this amount of people are. I didn't know. I have my own goals with my platform, you know what I'm saying, as far as how I want to move the needle and things that are important to me and how I want to use my platform to make some change. Mm. I have a blueprint for it, though. I know that this shit is chess. I know this shit's not checkers. And I didn't know so many of us were playing checkers. So that's emotional for me, too. I thought we were a little further than we are. Mm. So now I'm realizing, okay, I might need to go back to the checkers table, not necessarily sit down and play, but gather these motherfuckers up and tell them it's chess now. Mm. I didn't know that. I was just going to start playing chess. So it's also very eye-opening for me, too, to understand on a more extroverted level of bringing everybody together on a macro level, opposed to just taking care of my household and making sure my household is playing chess. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Interesting. Yeah, I was reading a Fader article that came out today with the organizers of the festival, and I noticed that there was like a couple of quotes where it seemed like they weren't really necessarily too happy with you, that they personally thought that this is that the controversy was kind of like your fault and that it should have been handled in a different way. Do you at all think that you did anything wrong by going out publicly and saying like, I'm pulling out of this festival and this is why?
Absolutely not. Like I said before, if it would have been brought to me like, hey, these are our plans with the festival, I could have just told them no thanks. Mm. It would have never been anything public. Once the flyer dropped, I wasn't going to get on the internet and be like, fuck that. Like, no, I just would have never been a part of it. The only reason it had to go public was because I have supported publicly, and the only reason that it even reached any headlines was because of the amount of hate that I got. Metro Times was the first in our city. Metro Times was the first to reach out to me. You know, they are supporters of mine, and they saw the hate. The hate is what got their attention. You know what I'm saying? That is what made people pay attention. So the same people that are like, you're on a smear campaign or you're trying to drag us through the mud, it's like this exact phenomenon that you're doing to me right now is what got the attention. You know what I'm saying? I could have pulled out of this festival. Nobody would have gave a shit.
Yeah.
Nobody would have gave a shit. Yeah. It's because the media was able to have a front row seat of seeing people that they had seen support me turn on me in real time that made it some shit to talk about.
That's some good theater right there. That's what the media is always looking for.
Hello? You know? And I didn't do that. All I did was apologize. Mm. All I did was apologize. I might have said a couple little things in the beginning just off that emotional shit, but like as far as trying to push any narrative or anything like that, fuck that. That shit was done from the hate that was unleashed upon your baby.
Does this kind of make you rethink how you view some of the intentions of a lot of people who do end up in these kind of spaces where maybe you are now looking at it like, God, like, are some of these people just bullies? Like, they just really are, you know, like, do you feel sort of differently about some of like the organizers of the event and stuff in the way that you've seen them handle this situation?
It does change my perspective in the sense of I've always been warned about, you know, everybody has an angle. They have an agenda that they have to get done. Mm. Everybody's always warned me about that. And it's not that I didn't take it serious, but it's like it's very cliche as well. It's like, duh, we know, like, but this gave me an opportunity to really see that these organizers won't care about you. Mm. Like, if had any research been done on me or had anybody even cared who I was as a person, you would already know I probably wouldn't even fuck with no shit like this. Mm. So I wouldn't even been drugged into something like this in the first place if these people cared about me. Or at least they would have said, hey, these are our plans. So even on a business tip of we care about your career, you know, we care about your following. We care about how far you've gotten. We care about any damn thing. You might have offered some knowledge about what your plans were with your festival. And that's what showed me I was never cared about in this festival from jump, you know. And I agreed to do the festival for free. And that wasn't even taken into account. You know what I'm saying? Like that, I was not being cared about, period. And I was doing it on some care shit in the first place. I had done Afro. I had done a show with these people before last year. It was different. I mean, I think it was the birthday of one of the curators, and they booked me for it, and it was straight. But it wasn't done like this. There was no narrative like this, as far as I know. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm skeptical of what was going on behind the scenes. Now that I see how things are moving, but it was never no hate. That's another point that I do like to make. Like, I've done this show before when it wasn't on this tip. Like, and it's small and it's quaint and it's not anything that's about to uproot. The discrepancy of black equity is not nothing that's about to do none of that.
That's what's funny is that, you know, a lot of these conservatives, when they're watching this conversation take place, is that they're imagining that this was like fucking Coachella and that like the biggest artist in the world is pulled out and that there's like, you know, you just gave up on like the 100 racks that you were about to get paid for this and everything. But when I looked at it, I'm like, oh, this looks like a pretty small festival, because could you imagine what it would have been like if something like Coachella sized or even like Lyrical Lemonade's Summer Smash size were to actually have that kind of pricing plan in effect? It's like, it would have been a very different conversation. And one of Absolutely. The most damning things was just the fact that the online like ticket processing site basically told them, like, you're not allowed to sell your tickets if you're going to use this method, which I thought that was
and they were very outward about it. I mean, yeah. It's, you know, like, it's because you just can't, like, and I think it was more of a with all those things, considering all those things, I think the curators thought it was just going to be kind of like kinfolk and them type of situation. It was just going to be, you know, me and my partners. And once it got more traction, it was like, that's when it became a problem. And I think that is why I was painted the villain. It's like, we would have got away with it if you wouldn't have, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, again,
they would have. This kind of shit probably happens all the time, like on a small scale, that nobody really thinks to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Like, it's crazy how much shit can happen if the news never finds out about it.
Absolutely. Or
like the craziest shit on earth goes down, but the cops never find about it. So it's never in the newspaper. Wow. And that's just it, you know?
That is crazy.
But then one reporter finds out about it and writes one article, and all of a sudden it becomes this insane thing.
And that's literally what happened, just because, I mean, editor-in-chief of Metro Times is front row at Tiny Jack shows,
right?
So I mean, if you knew me, you would know that. If you cared about me, you would know that.
But you know what the weird thing about this too, and tell me what your thoughts on this are, is that this is all happening against the backdrop of, like, without question, our president saying the most racist shit that any president has ever said publicly, and being completely not ashamed in any sense.
So
it's kind of like the people are like, the idea of someone of a woman of color sort of being nitpicky about the way that, you know, other women of color are running their festival, it's kind of like an odd time to have that argument, because there is so much like in your face racism that's sort of been laid out on a national scale to a level that nobody can even fucking wrap their head around.
But it's about being objective. Like, that's what about all this shit's about. Like, everything is about being objective. And I mean, nobody is completely objective, of course, but if one of your mantras is stay objective, Jag, then you might be a little bit more objective than the next person whose mantra is they owe us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's about what you're feeding yourself. It's about, yeah, that stuff's out there. I don't feed myself Trump. I can't do it. I can't do that shit.
That's an unhealthy way of life.
You hear me? So I'm not about to be out here moving off. I'm like, I had a big, nice, hefty Trump breakfast, because I didn't.
Right.
I didn't have that. So I'm not going to move that way. I'm not going to move off that hatred for Trump, or that hatred for anybody that looks like him, or that hatred for anything that was done to me. I don't move off that shit. I don't eat that shit up. I know about it. I don't eat it up. That's not what I feed my soul. It's not what I feed my spirit. So what I feed my spirit is what you're going to see come out of me in those emotions, in that moment, that triggering moment. what I've been feeding myself, and that's not just me, that's anybody. What you've been feeding yourself is gonna come out when you're triggered. Mm. And what came out of me is, I can't fuck with this. This is not for me. This is not aligned with my soul. I'm out. Let me apologize to my people. That's what just all the fuck I was doing. Apologize to my people, and the shit blew up. Mm. Your girl blew up off an apology.
That's pretty nice. Yeah, usually the apology thing is not a good thing for anyone's career. Usually it's just embarrassing and lame. Yeah.
So, I mean, and it was just, that's just the bottom line. And I'm like, it was heartfelt. It was just heartfelt on some, damn, this just ain't for me. And had I known it wasn't for me, it would have never been for me. But since I didn't know, now that I do, my bad for maybe putting anybody else in a compromising situation, including my own damn friend who had to hit me up and tell me about this shit, and maybe my own damn grandmother who's in heaven. So it's like, fuck this. This just ain't for me. That's all it was.
What's the weirdest shit that's happened to you as a result of this? Have you had anybody in particular reach out to you that you were like shocked that they were interested in it or anything like that? Anybody been critical of you that you were shocked that they even knew who you were?
Well, you weren't critical of me, but I was surprised to have you reach out for something like this. Oh, you know what cool. I'm saying? That was awesome. That was definitely a moment. So thanks.
Oh, and now we're here. Yeah, here making history.
Okay, so that was lit. But as far as someone who's critical that I didn't actually see it coming, Charlamagne.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't see him being critical. Because he is, although he is super, like, pro-black, I definitely consider him, like, a, like, smart and, like,
but he and a businessman. But he sided with your perspective?
No, he didn't. He was critical of me.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, as far as I know.
What did he say?
I don't really know the details of it, only because somebody told me I was donkey of the day. So I was hyped though, because I'm like, damn, like that's I just big. Started doing this shit, bro. And I'm donkey of the day out here. Like,
yeah, that's
big. You know me. So, but then I found out I wasn't. And then I just was kind of over it. So I never even really like dug into the actual, just like conversation. But he didn't agree with me, and people loved that. So that's how I found out about it. But I didn't expect that. I didn't expect him to be critical. I definitely expected support from the Breakfast Club, just because they come off as like smart business people, but I don't know them.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been nice if they had like called you in and wanted to have a conversation about it instead of just dismissing it.
Yeah, that would have been something.
Yeah,
I would have known what they said.
I feel like there's a lot of like old heads, and I hesitate to put Charlamagne in this category, but he's basically, you know, he's an old head who I feel like he grew up with super misogynistic perspectives, and a lot of the stuff that if you like really read about and everything, it's like, you know, he came up in a very different time, and I feel like he is sort of someone who's like overcorrecting for it, where, you know, somebody told me they were doing an interview with fucking Charlamagne the other day, and he said bitches, like just talking about girls, and Charlamagne like stopped it and was like, so it's 2019, y'all still really calling women bitches, huh? And it's like, you know.
It's like, I feel you.
This
it's
is definitely rap like music, I feel bro.
You. Right. But in the know. Song that you sing, you know what I'm saying? Right. And that's why it's like, it's hard. It's hard. Like, it's like, I get the narrative, but like, it's got to make sense. Like, you got to make it make sense. That's what it's all about. All this woke shit got to make sense. Mm. Like, you got to think about the ears that you're trying to send the message to. Mm. Not so much about the mouth it's coming out of. So I feel like a lot of the woke people don't understand that the ears might not be woke. So you might have to modify the wokeness, which is really just modifying the education that you was able to consume the way that you were able to consume it, and change it and be a communicator and actually make it something that somebody else can understand. And we fail at that level at institutionalized levels. That's why the school is so fucked up. And we fail at it just at sitting around and talking to people. So we got to work on that.
That's the problem, is that the if you were to take the most insular conversations that are happening between activists and stuff, then you obviously you're getting into the nitty gritty of little micro discrepancies that people have with different issues. But that's okay, because those issues can be discussed within these communities, but then sometimes pieces of those discussions come to the forefront, come out into the public, and then people who aren't really like versed in the types of conversations that are happening within these communities are all of a sudden exposed to it, and it's like, then again, it's like weaponized by the right. And all of a sudden it's, you know, this coffee shop kicks some guy out because he did this like super, you know, it's like any little thing like that. I can't think of like a good example of like the real extreme types of shit that happens,
right?
But like, you know, It's weird, like that dynamic does happen, where there are people who are super concerned about injustice, and then some of their wackier conversations or more far left conversations, then when it comes out to the public, people just don't know how to consume that. And this is kind of like that too, because to a lot of people, and that's actually the real positive of this, is that a lot of people never considered the fact that music festivals do have issues with race, that one way or another, like, it would be a positive thing to be able to remedy, like, it, you know, and it's,
absolutely. And yeah, I think that's a huge win for everybody that's involved with this, is that there's so much awareness that has been brought to the issue, for one. There's been so much awareness brought to the fact that these marginalized spaces and these marginalized people can need the help. And then there's also a lot of awareness brought to, like I said, on my end, where people that think more in the school of thought that I subscribe to realize where some of us are, and that we kind of need to, we didn't fail, but we weren't necessarily focused on making that part make sense and making sure that we understood that we don't have to go that route. We don't got to take it that way. Maybe we didn't sew it up right to make sure that everybody knew the blueprint didn't have spite in it, or like the blueprint didn't have room for that in it. It was more of a something that we're positive and progressive, and that's why those words sound so similar. Like, we're trying to go that and that way. Yeah. So I think it was overall something that could very be positive for everybody involved. It's a learning experience for a lot of us. It is something that we can learn from and actually still get to that same goal. It just got to be cleaned up. That's all it is.
In what ways do you feel like, or has this made you more or less confident and committed to your music career?
More, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. My music is definitely, you said you listen to it. So it's like, it's definitely, if you're not tuned in to the message at the moment, it's definitely just some fun shit.
Yeah.
But there are so many principles in my music. Like, we were talking not too long ago about how damn near everything that has happened was spoke up in some type of way in this music, because my principles are right in the music. Like, what I believe in is right in the music. I might say it in a way that it lays on the ears the right way, because that is what I do as a communicator. That's what I'm doing as a vessel. I want it to reach you. So I'm going to make it sound a way that just naturally feels great coming out of me anyway, but it's definitely a way that makes sense for who I'm trying to reach anyway. Mm. But those principles are there, and I've never felt so solidified in that purpose than I do now. So absolutely, it definitely gave me a push for myself and some solidification that I needed, because I'm coming. I dropped out of my master's program for this shit. So I definitely needed a little like, yeah, you good. You made the right decision type shit to happen. And this ain't it. Like, this is it for sure. I'm needed here.
I feel like the world is like primed for you to your next music video or your next thing that you put out is like, you know that there's big eyeballs on you, and you know that you've already courted enough controversy that it's like you could easily sort of like replicate this and like just create a big old shitstorm.
Absolutely.
Which is what that's what art's all about.
I'm geared up.
Geared up.
Charged up too.
Tell me some more interesting things about you as a person, things that we need to know about you outside of the fact that you've managed to create a race war over the past few weeks.
I'm cracking up. What are some interesting things? I have a juice company.
Really?
Yeah, I'm into health. Like, I'm really into health.
Juice? Like, how do you make the juice? Do you have a farm or?
It's just raw juice. And then I'm really good in, so Hamtramck, that little town that I grew up in. Those are my boys. They have like the best markets out there, and they stay open real late, and they're huge, and they have the best fruit and stuff like that. So they hook me up real good. And I get like cleanses off. I do like 24-hour and 3-day, 5-day, 10-day cleanses just for like spiritual clarity. My whole team takes them. Like, we definitely invested into it. And it is local, and especially for marginalized areas, and it's ways to get, you know, health back into the community and stuff. Because when I was in college, that's when I really realized like the redlining and stuff like that. And as far as just like the hood not being able to get their hands on what they need to start the war in the first, to start the battle against this bullshit in the first place, you know, tempo got to be together. Mm. Say that while I drink Jack Daniels, but everybody got their vices. But, you know what I'm saying? You got to offset, you got to figure it out. So, but yeah, I am very into health though. And, that is definitely something I don't think a lot of people know, just because it's not a typical thing, especially for a type of rapper that makes type of music or does what I do on stage, to just be up there off raw juice.
Mm. No, yeah, but I mean, that is a real, real problem when it comes down to it, that a lot of times when you go to less wealthy neighborhoods, that, I mean, the diet is terrible. The level of water, that a lot of times when I go to the hood and I'm just looking at these kids, I'm like, you guys are not drinking enough water.
Period. And I mean, that's a big problem.
Like, it might seem a little frivolous, but actually that's a huge thing in terms of like the quality of life that you're living, you know?
Mm-hmm. For future you, for present you, for every you, that they all need water. Yeah. And so that it's a huge issue, and not even just the fact that we're not drinking it, but even if those kids in those areas were to start, the options for water that they have are whack. Like, out of like, in comparison, Detroit actually has like some decent water, to be honest, like that comes out of the tap, which I still, you know, but it's decent in comparison to a lot of other places. But but even I'm talking about like the water bottles, like the type, the acidity that's in the water that is available in like the stores that are close to these marginalized areas is whack. Like, it's not fair. So, but yeah, that type of shit, that's what I'm on. I got that going on. That's how I really made my way into the conscious community, was through the juice.
Oh, okay.
But, it was always, I started it in college just because I was realizing like all my peers and stuff was off like Tyson chicken nuggets and shit like
right,
that. And
that's
I was
what I'm like, saying. People eat McDonald's every day. It's like, yeah, God, it's you just, I wish I could explain to you what you're doing to yourself with that food and how much better you would feel if you were able to cut that shit out.
And that exact wish is where my rap came from, because I didn't, you can't speak to those people like that. You can't speak to people that aren't, that have to worry about other things.
They got big ass problems.
You hear me? Mm-hmm. So you can't just come out and say, drink more water. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. What? Fuck up. I'm talking about.
So maybe you can in a song though. You know what I'm saying? Like just yesterday we cut a track and I think I said drinking spring water by the caseload. That is my two cents. You know what I'm saying? I'm not on here like where the Remy at. And I'm not against it because I'm in this bitch with Jack, period.
Right.
So I don't get it fucked up. But at the same time, I gotta put these nuggets in there. You know, these seeds gotta be in this music because it means so much to me, and that shit means so much to me. So just putting those in there, like letting the kids know, like not even just the kids, shit, I put my mama on health. So it's like letting everybody know, like you can do that stuff and be cool. You can drink water and be cool, I swear. Like, I swear, it does not take away your street cred to care about hydration.
Might have to take a glug right now.
Okay, Tiny Jack Impact.
Hey, let me ask you this. You and your girls are, like, hopping in a car. You got to drive for, like, an hour to go do something. What's the soundtrack?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit of a control freak. So if we took, like, a group, like, consensus of it, it would probably be different. But because I am typically the driver, it's just whatever I want, which would usually be a lot of Detroit shit. A lot of Detroit shit. If we're going to something for me, I may slip myself in there. But so like a lot of, you're going to have a lot of Sada and a lot of Drago and Bino.
Ooh, yeah, those are my boys right there.
Okay. Shout out to them. Yeah,
they're so funny. God
a lot
damn.
Of that going on. Baby Smooth is definitely
Baby Smooth,
broken.
There you go, yeah.
He has broken into my heart as of lately. So
he works with my my dude TK, who signed like Shoreline Mafia and Greedo and stuff.
Fire.
He's working with Baby Smooth. Yeah,
sweet. Yeah, no, he's got something. He's got something going. So yeah, like a lot of that going on right now. You might catch a couple of little fun things, and you might get some NERD in there. Maybe a little. You might catch.
That's fun.
Might catch me in there. You know, especially if we're going to something for me. Yeah, we might throw a little bit of unreleased tracks. Especially that is actually where the insight of the others come from. They like to listen to my unreleased shit.
Oh, see, there
so
you go, yeah.
they like to request that stuff. But
it wouldn't be a interview with somebody from Detroit if I wasn't like, yo, so do you like Eminem?
Oh man, and that's crazy though, because, and I always call him Slim Shady just because he had such a effect on me when he was Slim Shady. Like that is when he really had the biggest effect. But he was one of the first individuals, and this is actually in a lot of my print. Like he is one of the first individuals that let me know that I could do what I wanted to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was one thing, like, I felt like he was talking to me. When the teacher gets in front of everybody and tells the class that you could do what you want to do with your life, it's like, it's real Hallmark. Like, it's real. Even as a young child, I was always like, I was only child, so I was well beyond my years, and my mom was like, that was my homegirl, so I grew up fast just on some, just having that dynamic with my mother, so it was real Hallmark. My mom really talked to me real cut and dry, real loving, but definitely no fluff, and so, that was Hallmark to me. But when Slim Shady showed me that I could do whatever the fuck I wanted to, he was talking to me. I remember he used to draw me in so crazy. And I would always have, I don't care what's going on with him. I don't care what he's making. I don't care who he with. I don't care nothing. He will always have respect for me, even if whatever is going on. Because that's a pivotal moment in my life. Especially for it to be somebody who later on, my experiences taught me to kind of look at funny as a white man. You know what I'm saying? That he was one of the first people to show me that I could even do my thing.
See, that's interesting, because from a very different perspective, though, I've always kind of thought that Eminem was the reason, was like my blueprint for how you're like a decent white rap fan. Because he, like, people always ask me, like, oh, did you say the N-word when you were younger? I'm like, no, because I was an Eminem fan.
Gotcha.
And Eminem was like, okay, Eminem doesn't say it, so I'm not saying it, even though all the white trash kids in my hometown were saying it and shit. I'm like, no, I want to be like Eminem.
That's fire.
So I'm not saying it.
That's fire. And he was still able to be just as raw, just as, you know, admirable without having to do that. You know what I'm saying? And I guess that's probably a great reason why he reached me, because he wasn't out here doing shit like that. And he was just being true to himself, not trying to make it too much this or too much that. And and the fact that everybody hated it, like all the like the moms and shit hated it and stuff, and like that shit got my attention too, because I was young when he dropped, so I had never seen moms rally against a person. Like that was like a new phenomenon in itself. I had never seen moms rally against nothing but drunk drivers.
Yeah.
So I didn't know moms was mad at artists and entertainers and stuff like that. I didn't know you could have so much going on in your art that communities will rally against you. Like, so it was very eye-opening for me. His life, like literally his existence, what he went through was inspiring for me. So yeah, I definitely fuck with him for sure.
That's fire. So do you have any kind of game plan for the stuff that you're planning on putting out, or what your next moves are going to be?
Absolutely. Like at first I was a little like, oh God, need to hurry up and show the world what my plans and my blueprint looks like. But then I realized like it is chess. Like I was never supposed, I have my blueprint. Like I have the shit sewed up the way I want to. And it's, that shit is spiritually ingrained. And that shit is like, means a lot to me. I did a lot of grunt work, a lot of internal work to get my blueprint together. And I'm not going to let no situation like this rattle my chess game up, because that's how you fuck around and lose. So, I do. It's modified a little bit just because, like I said, I didn't realize where we were. I didn't realize where we were in the times. So I definitely have some things in between my content where I do want to make sure that I'm putting out my principles in a little bit more clear of a way in between my crazy rage coded shit. But, I definitely want to put a little bit more content focused on the brain that I do have, because it's not a common, not a common school of thought I'm seeing amongst my peers. So I think it's important that I do share it maybe a little bit earlier than I plan to.
Yeah, that's what's up. Well, hey, I'm sure there's a lot of new fans out there after watching this, because that was a powerful 50 minutes of conversation we just did there.
I appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you,
don't
you
even
so
know.
Much. I appreciate
you don't even
that.
Know. Thank you so much.
And also, your nails look really great.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I have some Detroit shit for you.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
That's like Detroit
I wanted to get
style?
Them done. Oh, no. I mean, we all over the place. Just doing your fucking thing.
My girl would be very interested
Detroit.
To know about that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Man, yeah, they hooked me up in the city. So, yeah, you want to get your nails done, though, definitely fuck with Detroit.
Holler
but
at
LA
you.
Got some sweet shit.
You could do somebody's nails for them real quick.
Oh, yeah, fuck
if
no.
They pull
but
up.
I can hook you up with somebody who can hook you up.
Okay. My girl might need that, though, honestly. Like,
for real?
I'm trying to get her with like some bad baby nails that are like 8 inches hanging off of there.
She not for the shit.
I don't think so, no. If anything, through dating me, I've seen her nails get like less and less. Like she realizes she doesn't need to go above and beyond.
And it gets like that. But that's like, that's that liberty I talk about. You know, she should be able to do that. Do
there
whatever she wants.
Own your womanhood.
Absolutely. Long, short nails, whatever it is.
Tiny Jag.
Hello.
No Jumper.
Thank you.
Coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes.